Okay, this hour you will call us and we will take your calls as we talk about the poison spring, the secret history of the EPA. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our guest this hour, Ivi Valiantonis, his book, of course, Prison Spring, Poison Spring, as we talk about the EPA. Might also be Prison Spring for some of them, Ivi, huh?
Yes.
Now, is anybody going after them? I mean, so we've got you bringing forward these atrocities, but is anybody going to go after them?
Well, I recommend that the environmentalists, for instance, could go after them. I mean, by joining forces together and maybe taking them to court, because many of these guys violate the law. And the law itself, by the way, the law that regulates, for instance, pesticides, is designed to actually be deceptive. It was drafted by polluters long, long time ago. And there is, for instance, an item or a section in the law that talks about emergency exemption, and this is actually taken advantage by the industry so that they can actually bring into the farm untested chemicals. So they talk to the governor of the state, and the governor of the state, let's say California, writes a letter to EPA, and they say, we need this untested chemical because our farmers need it, because the stuff they use now are becoming ineffective. So suddenly you can have for 3 months or a whole year huge areas of land being sprayed by these untested chemicals. So it's really a violation of the law, a violation of our health and the environment. And yet they routinely do that because the law itself allows them to do that sort of thing. So in redesign, rethinking about a new EPA, we also have to redesign and rethink the law itself. So the law is very straightforward and clear as to what acts are allowed and what are not allowed. And if we do that, then we have a chance to improve the quality of what we eat and the water we drink. I mean, the other point about all this is that small farmers and organic farmers in particular do not use this stuff. And the small farmer, even if he's not organic, uses much less. So if you take an orange coming out of a large farm, it has many more chemicals and many more poisons than the same orange coming out of a small grove. So the small farmer that used to be the king in this country has become almost wiped out because of the tremendous expanse of these large farms that they're thousands of acres in size. So they use helicopters to spray all these chemicals, and they don't really pay much attention as to the consequences of this.
Indeed, no, they don't, do they?
And you know, my first job within EPA was to be in a program, they call it Farm Worker Protection Program. And this is where I got very upset, because the information that came to my way and my observations, I mean, that got me to write memoranda and say to my superiors, these farm workers are becoming like, they are like guinea pigs. I mean, they are sprayed and they get exposed, and they have children that play very close to dirty water and probably sprays. And I said, it's intolerable. Why should we have human beings in that kind of dangerous condition so that we can go to the grocery store and buy cyanine oranges or cyanine tomatoes or bananas or whatever? So we need to rethink about agricultural system, because all the stuff that I talk in my book comes because the farmers have been hooked to this tremendous number of very toxic chemicals for decades, and we need to get them out of it. And one way to do it is to redesign EPA, to have a better EPA so that they are more strict and more scientific in what they do, and therefore the polluters, once they get the government to check them, then they will have to change their ways. Otherwise, they're going to be put out of business.
I would bet, EV, if the same kind of probing like you did with the EPA was done with the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, we'd probably find the same kind of atrocities, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't call them atrocities, but in fact, they are atrocities.
They are. Let's take some phone calls with you. We'll start by going west of the Rockies. Karen is with us in Eureka, California. Hello, Karen. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm very interested in this because I have been concerned about our environment since the 1960s. I am an elder, retired teacher. I have a concern about, I've been thinking about the number of individuals and the increase in violence, and such as all the mass shootings and even the small ones that are still terrible. And I'm wondering if the poisons, the toxins that we had, that the kids have been ingesting all these years, could have something to do with an increase in mental illness.
Well, that's a good question, Karen. You know, there are no studies which would point to that, unfortunately. We do know that most of these kids have been overprescribed medications, but Evie, I'll let you jump in on this for your reaction.
Yes, some scientists they did find, for instance, that in terms of experimental animals, the animals that have been exposed to certain pesticides, for instance, they're becoming very aggressive, and the children that were, or the animals that were not, they were not as aggressive. So you can extrapolate from that kind of study that maybe the children, if they not only they take drugs, but they eat, if they eat conventional food that has these kind of chemicals, in theory, it could be that they, the children become very aggressive and they end up doing what this lady is suggesting. It's all possible because some of them, as I suggested, they are neurotoxins, meaning they affect your brain, they affect the central nervous system. And our behavior is controlled, is part of that system. So if you eat very bad food and you get all this plus sugar, all it's a toxic mix, and we don't know the consequences.
What do you recommend, Evie, that people do to fight eating, stop eating contaminated food?
Well, the avenue that we have available to us is organic food. With organic food, you don't have any genetically engineered organisms in it. You don't have any sludge, no radiation, and not toxic, not synthetic chemicals. So it's the closest you can get to what it was in this country 50 or 60 years ago. I mean, this is before the modern, before we started flooding the environment with all these chemicals. And then we used to grow good food, in fact, even better nutrition food without the use of these chemicals. So that's my recommendation, would be to eat organic food, and then begin to be active and join an environmental organization and spread the word and see if you can have an impact in the politicians that you elect, because it's the politicians that make the decisions which put EPA in some kind of a prison, so they don't, they cannot really act their own self. They cannot fulfill their own mission, which is to protect us from toxins and protect also the natural world. If the natural world suffers, we suffer, and vice versa. So we need to have a broad mind about animals and insects. They are all part of the natural world, and they are all part of our health. And if we damage one, we suffer. For instance, if you spray and the spray goes into the river and the fish are contaminated, and then you eat the fish, you're going to be in trouble. The same thing with the food that we eat. I mean, the stuff gets into the drinking water. So how more dangerous can you be?
Oh, it's fatal. How about fluoride? Did the EPA talk about fluoride at all? Or
they
was
did.
That the FDA?
It's both. It could be the FDA and the EPA, because the FDA, because of the toothpaste and so on. But sometimes the fluoride can get into water, and they have allowed fluoride in water. And the debate has been intensive for several decades whether to get rid of it or whether to maintain it. But it's still in the water.
Next up, Matthew's in Houston, Texas. Matthew, you're up with us.
Thank you so much for taking my call, George. I was with the EPA for a couple of years in the early 1990s, and it seemed to me that they were interested in expanding their territory, at least a lot of the folks that I know were. And so they were interested in finding contamination under every rock and so on. But what your guest is saying about these chemicals makes perfect sense to me, because if the EPA allows it, then when the patent runs out, then they can jump up and say, oh, my God, this stuff is so terrible, it's going to kill everybody, and look what we're going to do about it. And, you know, that's what they've done with the Freons. When the patent runs out on the Freon, then they say, oh, this is an environmentally damaging chemical, and we got to get rid of it and introduce a new Freon.
he's right, Evie. Go ahead. React to that.
Yeah. I mean, he may be right. I don't know exactly whether the case of Freon is exactly as he portrays it to be, but this kind of thinking must be going on. And again, the thinking of EPA is the thinking of the outside world, that is the lobbyists and the White House and the Congress. They are the forces that design and shape policy of EPA. EPA is more like in a bowl of fish. They have all these outside forces telling them what to do. And they're very vulnerable to cutting of money, to, if you have a Republican administration and a Democrat administration, they can just smash the place, as, for instance, President Reagan tried to do. I mean, he brought an EPA administrator from Colorado whose first act was to fire all the enforcement lawyers. She didn't want to have the laws enforced, that's all. And then we had George W. Bush administration. They sat down and wrecked the library of EPA. They deleted all the documents, and the EPA had spent millions of dollars in funding studies, and they deleted all this. They shred this stuff. They dump it. I mean, and then, the laboratories, as we have been saying, they're critical in the government's ability to find out whether what the industry says is right. When I started at EPA in 79, we had 12 laboratories. By the time I so-called retired in 2004, we had only two. So the laboratories were declining, the library was shut down, and they made it almost impossible for the scientists to do their work. So we have to change the climate, and we have to inspire the scientists to do real science. And the science tells you that you don't use hazardous stuff in your food because you're going to suffer. You're going to get some disease, your son or daughter will get the disease, and it's going to be problematic and troublesome for the rest of our lives.
And then Ryan's, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean,
Ryan's in San Francisco. Go ahead, Ryan. Welcome to the show.
Hey, so basically when I was thinking about the EPA, see, I clean my house with some cleaning products that I bought at the store, and then there was about a layer of mold a week later, and that mold made me feel like I was, like, in another space, like in a whole nother body. And I guess what I'm thinking is, like, is there something behind the EPA? Is there some driving force that we're just not aware of? Like maybe, I was thinking about the Men in Black. Like maybe it's kind of like that, like some conspiratorial thing, like involving JFK and RFK and thumbnails.
No,
I don't think there's any conspiracy behind EPA. It's the forces, the economic forces at work. That is the chemical industry and the other industries that they want to get their products approved and spend as little money as possible to do that. And they, of course, have tremendous profits. I already mentioned the industry that manufactures herbicides and insecticides and so on. They make $40 billion per year. So it's money, money and power. And they dictate the version of science that EPA uses to judge what it does.
How much is campaign contributions, EV? What are they doing there?
The campaign contributions regrettably bring the lobbies into the picture. And, of course, then the lobbies demands things to be done for them. And I mentioned already that the lobbies pay for trips for EPA staff and so on. But that's peanuts compared to what they do with Congress and the White House, the staff that works on the White House. And they fund the election of the president and the election of the Congress and so on. So they come back and they say, hey, we want this to be done. And guess what? The congressman has no problem to use the influence they have through, by telephone or by person or by the budget itself to order EPA to do certain things that may not be good for us.
That is so, so true. Anybody on Capitol Hill get your book, Poison Spring?
I hope they do.
Should have your publisher send it out to all the Congress.
Yes, I mean, that's a very good idea. I certainly will ask him. I mean, we need the politicians to be informed. I mean, and the purpose of writing a book like that is to really help the person who reads the book to understand how the government functions. And then with that knowledge, then you can ask the right question, and you probably will get some kind of response. But if you don't know what's going on, then you're not going to, you're going to be still in the dark. So I recommend everybody to read this book very seriously and then take it from there. Do something about it. Just like the ancient Greeks would say, sin athenai ke hierakin, meaning you can pray to Athena, but you better do something about what your prayer is all about. So this is exactly what this book is all about. It's a prayer, but you better do something about what the prayer tells you.
Oh, you sure do. Let's go to our first-time caller, Al is in Prescott, Arizona. Thanks for calling, Al. You're on with us.
Hi, George. Really enjoying your show tonight.
Well, thank
and
you.
And I was wondering if your guest is familiar with the book. It's called Slow Death by Rubber Duck.
No, I'm not. No, I don't.
Tell us about it.
You know, it's very closely related to everything you're talking about chemicals that have gotten into us. And like we're in our fourth generation now of toxic exposure. And a couple of things that just wanted to point out. The book was published in 2009, and it talked about that there's 82,000 chemicals used in the United States. They're coming out with 700 new chemicals a year, putting it into the marketplace. And of those, only 650 are monitored through the EPA.
Jeez, that's it?
That's it.
He's pretty much right. Most of the chemicals.
They talk about, and it's not just in our food supply. It's in, a lot of it originates from the oil industry.
Yes. Definitely.
And you know how big and politically tough oil industry is. And it's just gets into everything. And just one notable fight that was won was the baby bottles with the PBA.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing. But it's like, God, there's 82,000 other battles out there to win. And it's in our soaps. It's in all your cleaning products. It's in plastics. It's all over the place. Not just in pesticides, herbicides, and in the food chain. Anyway, there's some real serious hormone disruptors that are causing probably hundreds of billions of dollars in unneeded health care costs.
Oh, it's probably the tip of the iceberg in terms of how much all this has cost us over the years, EV. It's probably huge, isn't it?
Indeed. I mean, this gentleman is right that the 80,000 or so chemicals in the market right now, most of them have never been tested.
Well, maybe it's just too big. Let's find out. Let's come back in a moment, wrap up with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, beyond belief, that's our television program, and it is available to you 10 days free. Simply go to this website, sign up for it, beyondbelief.com. Welcome back to Coast. Is it too big, Evie? Is the EPA too big? Is the problem too big to fix?
No, first of all, the EPA is not too big. I mean, it, when I left, there were about 18,000 scientists and stuff. So it's a small-scale agency. And the problem, it is very large, but it can be fixed. But it does need, you know, public information. I mean, people have to know about this, what's going on, in order to demand change. Without the people's involvement, there will be nothing, because the people who benefit control the government. In a sense, they control Congress and the White House, and therefore the system will continue to be. And we're going to pay in price in terms of people getting ill and disease and death. And I don't know, I don't want to say that they're callous, but they haven't done much to improve it, the situation. But the problem is not really big. I mean, we have the science, and the science ought to be our guide in decisions about the environment and our public health. Well, there have been thousands of scientists, thousands of studies. After all, in 1962, Rachel Carson wrote that wonderful book, Silent Spring. And now I wrote this book 52, 53 years later. So the situation certainly is getting worse, but it's not completely hopeless. I mean, we have the alternative, as I suggested. The organic farmer does produce good food without relying on these very toxic chemicals. So what we need is to take the subsidies we give to the big farmers and give them to the small farmers. We need the White House to be involved in that. For instance, Michelle Obama has a little garden, but then she can do much more than that. Her husband, for instance, with an executive order, he can order the federal government to begin to eat good food, organic food. That will pump billions of dollars into the economy, into the agriculture economy, and you're going to have a tremendous expansion of small family farmers rather than the agribusiness that we support. Agribusiness, I mean, I have nothing against agribusiness, but agribusiness has to mend its ways and begin to be respectful of us that we buy its products. So if we do that, then we can actually begin to see a return in terms of better health and better quality of drinking water and the food and the environment in general.
Okay, let's take final phone calls. Let's go to Franklin and Maui in Hawaii, west, way west of the Rockies. Hey, Frank, thank you for calling.
Hey,
Franklin.
It's great to talk to you. Evie, I'm going out tomorrow and buying your book. We're fighting Monsanto here, which is doing a lot of testing on Maui. And the people are fighting back. We're exploring the 7 different corporations that make chemicals beside Roundup. And I went into the store to take a look at Roundup. There's nothing on it until you open a label up, and I didn't even see Monsanto when I did. Mm-hmm. Roundup is used to kill plants and everything, and it stays in the soil, and they add things to it that makes it infertile. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, sir. You're absolutely correct. I mean, this is another deceptive practice, for instance. We say that we test the active ingredient, but the active ingredient is never used alone. It's mixed up with a variety of other chemicals, including petroleum distillates, which are all carcinogenic. So the final product that you actually buy in the can is not what you think it is. It's far more toxic than the actual stuff that they advertise. And this is another misleading practice. And the EPA calls all these additional chemicals, they call them inerts, I-N-E-R-T-S. Inerts. They are not supposed to do much harm, but then they do. In fact, they used to take even DDT that was banned in 1972, and they use it as inert, mixed up with other chemicals. So it's really very, very bad practices. I mean, we have to clean house in terms of approving chemicals. And I agree, Monsanto has tremendous power, and it seems to me the whole genetic engineering process is not there in order to improve food quality, but it's there to make money and also to control the world's food supply. And that is a fact. This is why the state government of this country, the policy of the United States government is to support Monsanto 100%, because they're trying to influence other governments to buy the products of Monsanto. So they will not tolerate to get rid of the organic, to the genetically engineering of crops in this country. So I agree with you. You have a tremendous problem, but I think the more people learn about it, the less power these corporations will have, and the more dependent small-scale farmers we are likely to get. I buy all my food from organic farmers, and I have been into organic food for the last several decades. So it's a fact. I mean, this is good food, and good food from the ancient, from Hippocrates, the father of medicine. He said, food is medicine. So we really need to be respectful of what we eat, because it's our whole health and well-being depends on how well we are.
How disappointed were you when you got into the EPA and realized this isn't what you expected?
It was a kind of a traumatic experience. It took me 2-3 years pretty much to decide that I would have probably zero effect in through the channels. But I continued to write my memos, and I continued to be dismissed, so to speak. After all, one of my factions was to investigate biology and find out alternatives to these chemicals. And I used to do that, but they rarely, my colleagues, the economists and the biologists, never really pay attention to what I was saying, because their orders had been always from one chemical to the other to continue the practice of what we have today. So I was definitely disappointed. But then, you know, I mean, I'm a historian, so I know that societies in general sometimes made tragic errors, but then we cannot give up. So I began to collect my information and inform myself, and eventually wrote this book. And, you know, by the way, within the government itself, there are tremendously number of very good scientists. And they need a chance to do their job right. So that's what we need to help them do.
Let's go to Albuquerque, New Mexico now, east of the Rockies. Tim's with us. Tim, thank you. Go ahead.
Hello, George. How are you?
Good, Tim. I'm great. Thank you.
Mr. Valianados, I'm wondering if you might actually know my father, Dr. William Ray, who has an environmental health clinic in Dallas, Texas. It's one of the biggest clinics where he actually treats chemical exposures from all these different chemicals, and he writes books about it.
I have heard of him, yes. I have heard of him.
Yeah. I have an interesting story about him that he told me just about a month ago about how the lawyers of Dow Chemical actually called him once and told him they were sending a subpoena to him for a deposition. And this kind of scared my dad because he's had his license challenged many times. He was a former surgeon and became sick from the chemicals in the surgery room, so then got into investigating chemicals and chemical exposure and created a worldwide practice around this. So they asked him to come to this deposition. He called his lawyer and said, what should I do? And the lawyer was like, well, I guess you got to go. And so my dad sat back and thought about it for a while and said, I'm going to make some phone calls. Well, he had actually has the vice president and the CEO of Dow Chemical actually come to him for their treatment for their daughter and for their wife, respectively. Mm-hmm. So he made some phone calls to the CEO and to the vice president of Dow Chemical and told him, well, you know, I can't treat your wife and your daughter anymore. And they're like, well, what's wrong? Why can't you do that? And he's like, well, you know, your lawyers are harassing me and they're wanting me to do a deposition and I have a problem with all this. And so they were like, okay, wait. Okay, doc, don't, you know, throw off my, you know, our treatment yet. Let me go see if we can handle it. So they called him back in about a week and they said, don't worry, we've handled it. The lawyers will get in touch with you. Everything will be taken care of easily and effortlessly. And he said within about 2 or 3 weeks, the lawyers called him and told him, said, Dr. Ray, we will do whatever you want. You know, let's do the deposition. We can do it wherever you want to do it, whenever you want to do it. And my dad thought about it and said, okay, come to my clinic in Dallas on 9 o'clock on Friday night. And they were like, okay, no problem. They got there. They sat down with him and said, Dr. Ray, could you state your name for the records? And he said, my name is Dr. William James Ray. And they said, well, that's the end of the deposition. We're all done here. I think you got all the information you need. And they all packed up and they left. And
wow.
because the CEOs and the vice president had gotten really good treatment for chemical exposure exactly for their daughter and their wife. And so I asked my dad, I said, well, what do you think the motive is then? How can these guys go on, you know, introducing these chemicals that they know are toxic because their own wife and their own daughter have been had these chemical exposures and got really chronically ill and have gotten cured by my dad? And he said, well, they just don't think about it. They don't even know. They're not even attached to the rest of the company. They're just there to make money. And that's basically the whole gist of the thing is, you're right, it's all about economics. They just want to make money, and they're not even paying attention to what's going on in their own company.
Great comments there, Tim.
Yeah, it's a good story.
Amazing.
You're right.
It's happening everywhere. We'll go to Tom now in Plymouth, Washington. Tom, thanks for calling. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
I'm an agronomist by trade. And, you know, I raise both chemical crops and organic crops in my business I'm at. Okay, now, chemical crops, yeah, sure, they're not all healthy for you and everything, but commercially grown organic crops are worse for you. You know, they decompose dead animals for fertilizer in organic. It is legal. Anything that comes out of the forest is high in heavy metals, like arsenic, lead, any of that, you know, because it's natural in the soil. Okay, you talked about organic crops that was raised 50, 60, 70 years ago. Arsenic was the main bug killer in anything. There are orchards today that are so heavy in arsenic, they can't do anything with them.
From the past, huh?
From the past. And the ground is still full of arsenic today, you know, and your organic fertilizers, manures, are so high you know, for commercial growing, these dairies and chicken hatcheries and egg hatcheries use so many antibiotics and other chemicals to treat the cows and the chickens that it goes right into the plant. And whatever that animal ate or was given goes into you. Now, commercially grown organic crops is not healthy. I don't care what he says. They're not. Do tests on it. I have.
Now, you say, though, that Tom, you say that you plant both. Why do you plant the organic then?
Because people want it. So we do.
Huh.
Okay, it's not healthy, but we do it. People want it. Pays high dollar.
If you had to eat one or the other, which would you pick? The one with
the chemical.
You would. All right, EB, yes. I'll let you react. Tom, thank you for that.
Yes, I don't think the gentleman is entirely correctly. First of all, the organic industry is highly regulated, and they have to allow a certain amount of time for their soil to be clean from chemicals, from synthetic chemicals. And then as far as the fertilizer, the chemicals they use, they are natural. I mean, my father didn't call what he did organic farming, but he used manure from the donkeys and the horses and the sheep and the goats. So this business of having metals and poisons and so on in organic, it's beyond me. I think the gentleman exaggerated quite a bit about the organic farming. And I trust the organic farmer 100%, and I don't want anything to do with the conventional agriculture because of what I know they actually do.
Okay, let's go to Barry in South Carolina now. Barry, thank you for calling. Go ahead. Are you with us?
Hello?
Yep, there you are. Go ahead, Barry.
All right.
Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, this is Barry in Rock Hill.
Oh, there you are, Barry. Go ahead.
Yeah, first of all, thank you so much for shaking hands and giving me a nice hug last Monday up in Charlotte.
You are very welcome, but you don't have to tell everybody.
Listen,
that.
Tell Tommy, I'm a retired biochemist. I got a biology chemistry degree in 1970, the year the EPA came out, and I was thrilled that they wanted to test these things. But after about 10 years with the company, I was told point blank by my boss one day that actually paid off politicians with campaign contributions to approve different drugs and the industry. And this guy, your guest, EV, is absolutely right. His book should be a required reading by the Senate and the House of Representatives.
Thank you very much, sir.
Sure should. Barry, thanks. It was nice to see you. I was at a speaking engagement in Charlotte, North Carolina, and he came out. It was a private function, but they let him in, and so I got a chance to meet him. Nice guy, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Evie, as you look at all of this, and there's going to be a major push, is the EPA going to keep its budget, its 15,000 employees, and its $7 to $8 billion budget?
Well, when we have a Democratic administration, the answer is yes. When you have a Republicans coming in, the Republican president, that is, then they begin to dismantle the EPA. And I have already described what they did to the laboratories, what they did to the library. And when you have a Republican, they speak loud and they take money away and they fire people. So everybody becomes very frightened. But the Democrats don't do that. But nevertheless, the Democrats also continue to deal with these polluters. So
right.
Regrettably, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, they continue to do the bidding of the industry.
They still look the other way when it comes to all these offenses, don't
exactly.
They?
Yes, sir. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the tragedy of the situation, that we have allowed the government to be taken over by the regulated industry. And that, by the way, is also bad for business because foreigners discover about these things, and then they're going to mistrust American scientists and American science. That's no good. So we need to be honest because it's our health at stake and the health of the planet, plus business for the American industry. So this is not a revolutionary idea. It's an idea to come back to where we actually should be.
Protecting. Let's go to get a quick call from Valentina in Boulder, Colorado. Hi, Valentina, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I have a quick comment in the question.
Sure.
My comment is that you're right. This is a very serious problem, very, very important. It is, as you said, fundamental to all of us in our survival. But unfortunately, we cannot trust the government to do anything positive for us, the people, even less to protect us in any way. So, because everything is influenced by power and money, profit. So the a very basic question also, all of us go out and eat in restaurants. How can we possibly protect ourselves from any of these things that you're discussing in restaurants? When in because restaurants are there for profit, not to protect our health.
Well, the answer is that you eat organic food, and a restaurant that sells organic food makes more money, so they're going to try to protect their business by being good and by actually giving you what they say they do give you. They don't want you to get sick, then you won't ever come back to the restaurant. So this is my idea also with organic farmers. Yes, they charge more money, but they actually give you better quality food. And if you can, if you have a garden and you want to grow your own tomatoes, that's perfect. You should do it. But I think we need to have an alternative to the conventional picture, which is mistrustful, and I agree with you on that.
We are almost out of time. Would you give Evie people information on where they can get your book, Poison Spring?
They can, of course, go to the Amazon, but they can also go to their local bookstore. Barnes & Noble carries it, and major bookstores would carry it. And, of course, they can get directly to the company, Bloomsbury Press in New York. But the easiest way would be, of course, to go to the Amazon books.
Very good. Thank you so much. Up next, we're going out into space. Get ready for Dreams of Other Worlds.